I am seated across from Dr. Stephen Voss, a political analyst and political science professor at the University of Kentucky. Welcome back, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the prospects for the Kentucky Democratic presidential primary. Kentucky has been getting an awful lot of attention lately. We're not used to it, but the Clintons have been crisscrossing the state, and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders has been commanding large audiences in Lexington and Louisville. Is it fair to call us a battleground at this point, given that we won't sway the delegate count that much?
There's very little by way of polling data to help us guess which way it's going to go. So that almost makes us guaranteed to be a battleground because we can go either way. There are things about the politics of the state that favor both Democratic candidates. And so you could see why they both see that they had a shot to get a victory here. On the one hand, we have a closed primary, which helps Hillary Clinton. We have some conservative Democrats still here, which is rare nationwide. And therefore, those voters are likely to be Clinton voters. She's got good ties with the Grimes family, and she's gotten Beshear's endorsement as well. So the sort of two factions we had in the Democratic Party going back a few years. All of these pressures point to Clinton having an advantage. On the other hand, Bernie Sanders does well in states where the Republicans dominate. When liberals have sort of retreated to be just the small pocket of voters in the state, those are the states he's winning. He's winning the Democratic votes among Republican electorates. Another thing that favors him is Clinton made some comments that made her sound anti-coal. And we just saw in West Virginia, another coal state, Sanders beat Clinton. So at least out in the eastern part of Kentucky, you may see Clinton doing more poorly than she otherwise would have because of those intemperate statements.
So what about the general mood in Kentucky? Republicans went for Trump in March. We elected an outsider candidate for governor in Matt Bevin. Are Democrats going to follow suit maybe and hand a victory to the underdog here?
I'm not sure that the unhappiness among Democrats here quite reaches the same level as the Republicans. On the Republican side, between Trump and Cruz, a hard right conservative and a sort of renegade, they captured the vast bulk of Republican support here. On the Democratic side, they've seen some failures lately. They've been in a bit of trouble, and I think that maybe you have a more realistic set of voters.
For the sake of argument, let's assume Sanders chalks up another win in Kentucky and continues to battle it out to the convention. There's always talk about how much say a serious challenger might have in crafting the party platform, even if he comes in second. What's your read on that? How much pull do you think Bernie and his supporters here in Kentucky and elsewhere could have at the convention?
Well, clearly there will be a lot of Sanders delegates there who can get involved in a conflict, who can try to fight over the platform or the like if they choose. On the other hand, the Democrats, despite the sometimes contentious nature of their clash, are a lot happier with each other and they see on eye to eye on a lot more issues than the Republican candidates who were at the top did. So while it's always possible that you could have some kind of insurgency at the convention, I wouldn't give it even odds. I think that once Sanders has done what he needed to do in terms of pulling Hillary Clinton left, in terms of rallying progressive Democrats, I expect that he's going to be ready to focus on defeating the Republicans.
Well, shifting gears a bit, but sticking with the national races, Democrats will be deciding on a Senate nominee to face Rand Paul this fall. Lexington Mayor Jim Gray running a pretty moderate campaign, talking a lot about drawing ideas from both sides of the aisle. Meanwhile, you've got Frankfort City Commissioner Sells Wilder positioning himself as the unapologetic progressive. Who do you think has the best shot in this race, and will it matter come November when the nominee takes on such a big name in the Republican Party?
Right. Well, Gray clearly has the advantage in terms of most of the resources you need to mount a campaign. And so that means that Wilder will be scrambling hard to try to reach some kind of parity where he can put up a fight. He does have one clear advantage, which is that with Sanders mobilizing a lot of people from the top of the ticket, many of those Sanders voters may see him as the more logical choice rather than Gray with his business ties and his more mainstream candidacy. Another thing Wilder has going for him is that the last two Democrats to lose in this state were seen as kind of compromise, make no waves Democrats. The progressives call them Republican light. which was ridiculous. They weren't, in terms of their ideological positions, anywhere near Republicans. But that's the kind of dismissive behavior. That, so, sort of like they call moderate Republicans rhinos. They call moderate Democrats Republican light. Both people are ridiculous because, in fact, these Republicans and these Democrats that are supposedly wishy-washy are very far apart from each other ideologically by historical standards. Anyway, because Grimes and Conway were seen as trying to take the compromise road and they both lost, the temptation now is really high among more progressive voters to go with someone who has higher purity levels in terms of ideology. Now, they want to believe that if only we had a more progressive, more liberal, more unabashed left-leaning candidate, more people would get excited and they'd mobilize and they'd turn out. Well, that's certainly true of these progressives and their friends, but it's not the way general electorates behave. You don't see this massive surge of turnout in favor of hard right or hard left candidates. What you see is that the folks in the middle who usually decide elections because they're so numerous get scared off and they end up voting for the candidate who's closer to the middle of the road, closer to where the voters actually sit.
Did Rand Paul's presidential campaign wound him back home, do you think? The main charge Democrats are going to level here is that his White House ambitions are distracting from his day job in the Senate.
I think for the most part, Rand Paul did himself some good here by running for president. There are some problems he created for himself in terms of drawing down funds, sort of tapping out his contributors, and he'll have to rebuild his organization. It'll be a little harder to do so because he focused on that presidential campaign. But you know what it also did was keep the guy in the news, and Kentuckians who were interested in the Republican nomination battle got to see him up there on the stage with some other important players. He didn't mess up in any dramatic way. I mean, yes, he lost, and he didn't get a great showing, but he also didn't have any of the major gaffes or the really damaging misstatements that undermined a lot of other candidates. I mean, in fact, the main problem Rand Paul had in the presidential campaign is that he was boring, which nobody would have thought. He was supposed to be the most interesting man in politics, but once you have Donald Trump and Ted Cruz and Carson and Carly Fiorina and those folks, then Rand Paul's sort of intellectual approach, sort of bookish approach to conservatism was dull, and he faded. He faded in debates. He faded in the polls. But that doesn't do him any harm when it comes to a Senate campaign to have been seen as a boring presidential candidate. Mostly I don't think he hurt himself. The one thing Rand Paul does not appear to have been doing, and it's what people usually do when they want long-term congressional careers, is focusing at first on the sort of staff building, constituency service, showing you can do good things for the voters back home. And we haven't seen in the news a whole lot of Rand Paul successes, doing things on behalf of the state. So he hasn't built up the level of loyalty that often members of Congress try to build up in their early years. If that's an outgrowth of his presidential ambitions, then okay, maybe indirectly they hurt him. But I don't think directly they did.
One politician who has been trying to build up some of that goodwill is the incumbent Andy Barr. We've got a contest in the 6th District in the House. He has a primary challenger, and I believe two Democrats are also after that seat. Is that a safe seat for Barr this time around, do you think?
I would be surprised if Barr has any trouble in his primary battle. Any suggestion that he hasn't been conservative enough seems to me, again, devoid of fact. He's been a conservative member of the House. And ideologically, I think he met any standard most voters would hold him to. It's true that there's a bit of an anti-institutional backlash in the fact that Barr's got the ties he does professionally and in terms of which interests he promotes. You'll see people trying to make hay out of it. But, Barr has also put a lot of work being in the district, making appearances, trying to build up that sort of ties to the constituency to help him hold his seat. Unlike Rand Paul, Barr's already passed his sort of sophomore slump. Usually it's that first go-round where they tend to be in trouble, and he's gotten past that one. Now, once we move to the general election, It does seem as though he may be facing a somewhat tougher Democratic challenge than he faced last time. And, you know, we'll see if there's any kind of traction there on the Democratic side. But really, this is a bad year for people who wanted to have sort of outside chances to defeat a Republican. And the reason is because there's so many really sweet opportunities for the Democrats to defeat Republicans nationwide, that that Democratic money is going to be flowing to, you know, places like Ohio, where they can take out possibly a sitting U.S. senator. There's a good chance the Democrats will at least take the U.S. Senate. And so, you know, I think that's where we'll see the money pipeline that the Democrats have flowing, is toward those opportunities. You're not going to see as much cash available for the seats like Barr's, or really the Senate seat like Rand Paul's, that look like harder victories for the Democratic Party.
Well, Democrats and Republicans will also be selecting nominees in some state House and Senate races in the primary. But let's take a step back and look at the broader picture. Republicans are once again hoping to flip the House, but Democrats did manage to win 3 of 4 special elections back in March. Do you see a change of power in the cards in the lower chamber?
I'm oversimplifying a bit, but when the state redistricted, when it drew the state Senate and state House districts last time, they needed a plan that could get through a House controlled by one party and a Senate controlled by the other. And usually what you see, and I think we saw here, is essentially a House map that favors the Democratic Party and a Senate map that favors the Republicans. And you know, last time we saw the elections here, you know, you saw a lot of Democratic victories in one chamber, a lot of Republican victories in the other. Hard to believe those are the same voters, but of course they were. And what happens is the maps sort those voters out in different ways and produce different outcomes. Now, it's, to my knowledge, there's been no formal political science analysis of those House districts. I haven't done one. So I can't tell you, you know, how biased the map is toward the Democratic Party or not. But at least anecdotally, when we know about the process and when we look at some of these districts and we see how the votes translated into outcomes, it sure looks like a map that's favorable to Democrats. And so the Republicans are fighting an uphill battle to try to take that chamber. Democrats also have a lot of incumbency helping them out. In general, voters take an attitude of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And the first thing they decide to do is whether they're okay with keeping the person they already have. And if they are, it's hard to get a foot in the door and to get them to consider an alternative candidate. So the Republicans would have a hard fight here to take the race. Now, once you have at the top of the ticket Donald Trump as a Republican, which looks likely, running against Hillary Clinton, that's going to affect in weird ways who does and does not show up to vote, and how that new electorate, which will look like any other, will once that new electorate kind of shows and gets split up across those districts, you know, kind of all bets are really off once we have Donald Trump in the race. Let's say a bunch of people who previously would not have voted show up for Donald Trump. We don't know whether they're going to stick around for any of the other races. We have what's called ballot roll-off. They might show up, press the Trump button, turn around and walk out again, and then it doesn't affect the other contests much at all. And the only people who end up voting down the ticket are the same folks who always used to vote. Or they show up, they know Trump's the Republican, they hit the Republican Party button, vote it, you know, down the whole ballot and turn around and walk away, in which case you may see a surge in pro-Trump areas for Republican candidates who otherwise wouldn't have had much of a chance.
As we've been discussing, a lot of media outlets, of course, you know, dubbing this the year of the outsider. Now, it's always politically popular to shrug off any suggestion that you're an insider. But do you see this rubbing off on those down ballot races as far as the tone of those campaigns? Will we see Kentucky politicians adopting any Trump-like tactics or running away from that, do you think?
You know, for at least a generation, political scientists have been noticing the increase in distrust of government, the sort of scorn for existing institutions. And they were kind of like Chicken Little, you know, predicting the sky was falling down. Oh, the spike in cynicism and distrust, and in a sense, the system's not responsive, and a desire for a third party. All this is going to really wreck the system. And for an entire generation, they were wrong. And those predictions didn't really play out. The closest we came was in 1992, Ross Perot temporarily, an independent businessman who started the Reform Party, temporarily seemed as though he might be sort of a wrecking ball through the presidential election, but he derailed before you got to the general election, and he didn't really in any fundamental way change the system. Nothing changed since really in any dramatic way like that. So, you know, we've got this whole generation where there were signs that people were ready to wreck the establishment and throw out the insiders and take the mavericks, and they didn't. Well, now, a generation later, you know, I guess we've got all the children of those people who were saying all that nasty stuff about the system. They're starting to vote, and they're kind of acting as though they believe the ideals that their parents stated but didn't act on. We've got people who are really beyond the pale by the standards of a generation ago, a democratic socialist, right, which was a word you didn't want to go anywhere near. You didn't even want to be called a liberal, let alone a socialist a generation ago. We have a democratic socialist making a serious play for the Democratic nomination. We have a guy with zero political experience and not even a clearly beneficial business record making a play for the Republican nomination, and people seem okay with this. You know, as a political scientist, I'm wondering, why do these people think that you can step into a job that you haven't even done lower down in the career ladder and all of a sudden do it? What are they thinking? Would they take a doctor straight out of med school and say, here, let's go with the surgery? You know, a dentist working on their teeth or their orthodontics who's just finishing their undergrad degree? They sure wouldn't. But all of a sudden, I don't know, they seem to think it's okay to put the White House in the hands of a complete novice. So that cynicism seems as though it's here. You know, whether that extends to other candidates, it seems as though it will, right? We have a governor, Matt Bevin, who didn't climb through any political career ladder, who didn't have very close ties to the party that, you know, used to be in charge of the process of recruiting candidates and helping them as they moved up the political career ladder. This taste for basically completely inexperienced people seems to be pretty widespread.
Well, I've been chatting with Dr. Stephen Voss, one of our go-to political analysts here at WUKY. Thanks for giving us your take on this unpredictable election cycle.
Good to be here.